So today for our Friday Forum webinar, we welcome UVA alumnus Jamie Conklin. Jamie graduated from UVA's Department of Systems and Information Engineering with a BS and an MS in 2003. From there, he went to work for the Aerospace Corporation as a systems engineer. In 2006, he returned to UVA to be a research scientist in the Systems Engineering Department's Predictive Technology Lab. There, he developed threat prediction models, designed crime analysis tools, and conducted research in predictive analysis. As Director of Operations for CCRI, a Charlottesville-based data science firm, Jamie currently manages a portfolio of over a dozen analytical projects, the bid and proposal program, and human resources. Jamie has interviewed over 200 candidates and hired over 65 people in the last 9 years. So please help me welcome Jamie Conklin with the Inside Scoop, Careers in Data Science.
Thank you, Liz. I take it everybody can hear me, and I'm sure somebody will tell me if they can't pretty quickly. Thank you all for coming. It's very exciting for me to have this opportunity to chat with you all and share with you what I think is a really exciting career path that I've been very pleased with in my life. The organization of the presentation today is going to be a little bit of background on what is data science, what does it mean. This is my perspective. There are going to be plenty of others on that. Then I'm going to sort of go into how do you become a data scientist. While there are academic programs in data science now, many of us didn't go through those kinds of programs. So if you were going to transition into this career, how would you do that? And then finally, I'm sort of going to wrap it up with my perspective on what makes for a good interview and some tips for how to interview better, especially as it relates to this field. So to go ahead and jump right in, I think Liz pretty much covered who I am and my background. As she said, I do lead the hiring effort here at CCRI, and we've been growing rapidly. So that means I've been going through this quite a bit. And many of the people I've hired over the past few years have been career changers. So it's certainly not out of reach as far as moving into this as a new field. And it's certainly desirable because according to many articles and all sorts of other sources, one of the hottest fields there is. So what is data science? And is it some combination of things, or is it a unicorn? Is it this impossible thing to find? Someone who knows math, statistics, computer science, the subject matter, is finding the people who know all of these things impossible? Maybe, but probably not. I'd argue that it is actually a very attainable thing, but everybody's going to have to do some learning. I've yet to hire the perfect person who knew everything I needed them to know on day one. So the good news is that there's, as this is an evolving field, there's lots of opportunity for people to come into it and bring their expertise and learn what they need to know to become maybe what you might call a full-fledged or maybe a senior data scientist, depending on how you look at it. Here's another perspective on it, which is almost the exact same thing. I actually kind of like this visualization because it's, again, highlights the three areas, perhaps a little bit more casually, but it's a combination of being able to program and to build applications in the red, to have substantive expertise in both a specific domain or something that you can learn about a domain, but also problem solving in general, I think. And then finally, math and statistics. Sort of the nexus of all these three things is what most data scientists end up doing. I also kind of like that danger zone up there because I think, certainly coming from my background, we've all been trained in statistics. It's important to recognize that if you're not careful about what you're doing, you can certainly end up even making some mistakes. So we'll briefly address that. So, what is it that data scientists do? What do we spend our time with? Well, the most important thing is to make sense of data. And we're going to use rigorous analysis founded in statistics to answer important questions, not just any questions, but, things that matter. So sometimes figuring out what questions to answer is the most important part or the hardest part of some of these problems, and that's where the problem solving comes in. Then we're going to write code, whether it be in a statistical language or whether we're writing an application, to transform, clean, and analyze the data. We'll make recommendations based on the analysis results that we've come to, and we'll sometimes build tools to enable non-data scientists and other users to use this. At this point, I wanted to encourage you all to chat in and tell me what your backgrounds have been. You know, as I said, I think it's, a lot of this presentation is geared towards how do you move into a field of career, data science. So I'd be curious to know what was your degree in or what has your job been over the last few years so that I can, you know, sort of respond to that as I move through here. So jumping back into the three areas of data science, you know, there's the math and stats part. So mathematics and statistics all form the fundamental core of the data mining and machine learning tools that we use to analyze data. So what do we mean by analyzing data? Well, we're looking to find trends or patterns in the data, or we're trying to use the data to predict future outcomes or to better understand. So, you know, as I look through, I see economists, chemists, lawyer, all of these fields have, you know, vast quantities of data and are looking to predict the future in some ways. So really there is a lot of subject matter expertise that people that I see chatting in can bring to bear on real problems here. The warning, and this is sort of the skull and crossbones, the Jolly Roger we have here, it's easy now to jump in and learn how to do different analytical processes. There are a lot of tools out there that are free. There's data out there you can practice with. And so it's really easy to jump right in and start doing, quote, data science. I would encourage people as they do that, that they be thoughtful about that and to learn about the techniques that they're trying to apply here. And so the sort of, you know, former academic in me is always inclined to bring out and point out that, you know, it is possible to use these tools incorrectly and get a result that's wildly wrong. You want to be sort of aware of that. That being said, I would highly encourage people to go out and try playing around with these tools and learning about them, but just be thoughtful about what you're doing. If you're going to apply a regression analysis, read about regression and figure out what the assumptions are when you build those kinds of models. I'll reiterate this point of getting out there and trying stuff. So what are some examples of the kind of analysis that I'm talking about? Sort of the foundation, one of the pillars of statistical analysis would be a regression. And in the top right of this slide, I have a simple two-dimensional regression analysis. And you might want to understand how one variable affects another and how can you use this to anticipate what a result might be. So regression analysis is probably the most basic thing, and lots of people have probably encountered it in all different kinds of fields. The next example I have is cluster analysis. And this is a form of unsupervised learning that is particularly powerful and used in many different fields. So let's take marketing, for example. Let's say we had information on all of the different people who had purchased our product or had visited our website. You know, this would help us break down, we could use clustering techniques to break down these people into various groups so that we could conduct targeted marketing against those groups. It may be that we want to target, teenage, boys who like video games, or it may be the market that we're looking for is, mothers in their 40s who have teenage children. But being able to make those kinds of distinctions will change how we approach the marketing strategy. And so using these data, we can actually be more successful with our marketing. Neural networks and deep learning. So the pictures I have on the bottom left, neural networks and deep learning are used extensively these days to do image analysis and start automatically detecting what's in imagery. This is hugely important because now that everybody carries a phone with them everywhere they go, the amount of imagery that's available is growing very, very quickly. And the number of things we can do with that imagery is growing. Being able to automatically process and learn from these images is a growing demand. And then the sort of last example area I'll talk about is natural language processing. With social media, with the web itself, the amount of textual data that exists just has grown tremendously. And we can take advantage of that better if we can build systems that can interpret this text. And so natural language processing is the field involved with building, tools that help machines understand and parse text documents and make sense of them. So that's an area where, we spend a lot of time. So those are some examples of where mathematics and statistics, all of those tools are based in, basic math and statistics, and we use those as the foundation for conducting these analyses. The next component that I want to think about is the computer science part. You know, why is it important to have some programming skills? Well, accessing and manipulating data requires a range of skills. To just look at the data in raw form and sometimes to get it into a format that you can actually see it, you know, you often will need to use some scripting languages to manipulate the text or to get it in the right format. Then once you've done that, you probably want to store it in a database of some sort so that you can query it and filter it and make it available to applications and other users. So now all of a sudden databases and query languages become important. And then you probably want to do some visualization on it. So initially you might use a statistical tool like R, which any of you can go download for free today. If you search R or C-R-A-N, the Comprehensive R Network, I forget what the A stands for, but I'll type it out here. You can find R, go and download it, and it's a command line-based statistics tool that's free. And it has great visualization capabilities, all different kinds of charts that you can go look at. So these kinds of tools allow you to visualize the data. And then finally, I've listed Java, Scala, C#, C++, and Python. These are tools that you can use to build applications. And in many cases, you want to build an application around your analysis so that it can be shared with others or enable others to do the analysis without your background. In many cases, you want to build a tool that lets non-experts conduct the analysis and get the results very quickly. And then, you know, any discussion in data science without going into what is big data would be somewhat remiss today. And so big data are these enormous data sets, which sounds sort of obvious, but we're talking about things like the location and the textual data of all the tweets that come out over all time. Or you're looking at all the clicks that people, you know, conduct on Amazon's website. That would be a large data set. Facebook collects huge data sets about how people maneuver about their site and what they do while they're on that site. Marketing firms collect a lot of different kind of data. These data sets are you know, amassing, and to take advantage of them is non-trivial. And so the point I'm trying to make in this is that, you know, when you're dealing with these kinds of data sets, you actually need an additional set of skills, which would sort of be your big data set skills. And those are tools like Hadoop, which is a file system for storing large quantities of data in clouds where you have literally hundreds to thousands of servers working together. MapReduce is a related technology that allows you to operate on those data and to parallelize your code so that you can run these data analytics in parallel. Storm and Spark are both processing tools, and NoSQL is a range of technologies for storing data in a database that's distributed across these clouds or, you know, large groups of servers working together. So big data is a whole field in of itself, and I don't want to get too far off on a tangent, but it's certainly a relevant area. The other reason that I sort of point out that computer science skills are important is here's just a snapshot of some of the tools that we use at my company, and this is a fairly general set of tools. They're all open source, and in fact, we actually created the GeoMesa tool, which is listed under the GeoMesa section there. But the point is, there's a huge number of systems and tools that you have to integrate and work together to get these capabilities to work. And so having a background in computer science or having a background in programming or being exposed to people who've done this, you know, is very helpful. And these are the sorts of things that you will learn. And I'm certainly not saying you need to come into any data science job with all of these skills in hand, but knowing a handful of them would certainly be wise. And then the last sort of part of the is the visualization part. And the reason I wanted to put this in the computer science is because JavaScript is the main avenue for visualizing data on the web. And if you want to spend a lot of time just looking at cool charts, you can go to d3.js website and look at all of the various ways that they visualize data. It's a really cool JavaScript library, and they have hundreds of examples of different kinds of charts, and this is just a snapshot of some of them. But again, to build these applications, you have to use JavaScript, so you have to do some programming. Okay, so now we've got math and statistics as part of the background, you've got computer science and programming as part of the background, and now we get to sort of the problem-solving domain expertise. And to be honest, all these charts talk about domain expertise, and I've added in the problem-solving to glom it in here, but I think that a big part of being a data scientist is having a structured approach for solving problems. So I've listed one here. This is a part of an approach that we learned in systems engineering undergraduate, where you specify the problem, you observe the data, you analyze it, and you make a recommendation. And being any good engineering process, it's iterative. I apply this, and my company applies this whenever we're trying to solve a new problem. Is we do this SOAR approach. Lastly, the idea of understanding the problems and the domain. You know, sometimes you come in with a fair bit of domain expertise, and that's wonderful. So, for example, we've had people that we've hired who have expertise in one of the problems we've solved, and they've been tremendously useful. For example, we're doing one on cellular technology, and we have a guy who used to work for Intellis working for us. That's great. But having a structured problem-solving approach and having the expertise or sort of the experience to know what kind of questions to ask means that you can come in and learn a lot of these domains. So the ability to pick up a new domain and learn and understand the problems and see the forest for the trees is an important skill to have. Okay. So here's an example, and this is where we're going to get to do a little interaction here. We've built a tool that predicts where IEDs will go off in Afghanistan, and we presented two different visualizations to the users, option A and option B. So option A is just a bad and a worse, where's it bad and where's it worse, whereas option B shows all various gradations of threat. And so it goes from the minimum threat, you know, with many, many steps up to the highest threat area. So you really get to have a very nuanced view of exactly which areas are dangerous and how dangerous they are compared to another. So my question is, which one do you think is better, option A or option B? And so you can use your voting tool to come in here and vote as to which one you think was more desirable from a soldier's perspective. And I'm going to go to the next slide while you cast your votes. But we'll come back to this in just a second. All right, so, you know, jumping back out, here's an actual picture of the whole tool that we were building. And so now you can actually look at the threat and you can analyze it in relation to the various areas. And actually, you can build some routes and say, how would I want to drive through this area? And if I did, what would the threat profile be like? What are you going to do with this result? And so we've got the threat surface in the middle, we've got the three different color routes, and then along the bottom you can actually see how that threat profile looks. And you can actually compare some aggregate statistics on the bottom right, saying what's the maximum threat, what's the aggregate threat, and all these different statistics about the threat. And so I see a number of people weighing in here, so that's great. We've got some A's and some B's, and there's definitely you know, merit to both of those, but I'll let them come in for a moment more. But one of the other sort of domain expertise areas that we learned as we were building this tool is by talking to soldiers, they would much prefer an area or taking a route that had a short area with very high threat versus a long area of moderate threat. And the reason for that was that they could bring in alternate mitigation technologies or tools for that particular short area of high threat. So they can use, you know, additional vigilance while they're driving through those areas. They can bring in air support, or maybe they could have a team, an advanced team go in and mitigate the threat in a very isolated area. But if you have a prolonged but moderate threat, you really can't do anything special along the whole route because you just don't have enough resources. And so learning how soldiers would use a tool like this and the kinds of decisions they'd want to make from it was very helpful as we designed and built this analytic for them. So, as I said, I see a fair number of A's and a fair number of B's, which is good, so it's a mixed result. It turns out that the soldiers far preferred option A, and the reason that they preferred it was something they could execute on. And for their purposes, they were trying to make decisions, they were working in a high-paced environment, and as long as they could control the thresholds of what made up a pink area and what made up a red area, they far prefer to just see, you know, where should I take different actions? And so the option A was far more desirable, which, you know, when I first started in this field and started building a tool kind of surprised me. But over time, I came to appreciate that. There were a few analysts who liked option B because they were sort of the detail guys, but these were typically not the guys involved in sort of planning operations and actually doing things. Okay, so jumping ahead again. Okay, So here's some more examples of data science. So the first was the threat prediction tool. Here's another area that combines image processing, which would be a whole other area of data science, with textual analytics. One of the things that we want to be able to do is to emulate the capability that Google has. So if you go to images.google.com, you can say search for shipping container, and it'll bring you back a bunch of pictures of shipping containers. And that's great, Google doesn't make this as a service that you can just put on your network, and they don't allow you to customize it a whole lot. So we've been actually working on some technology that allows us to build classifiers using, you know, things like and things dislike the selected object. So what I'm showing in the top left picture is a search for shipping containers, and what it does is it understands what shipping containers look like as images, finds more of them and brings them back. And then we can actually select individual images and say more images like this one and less like that one. That's what the red thumbs down and the green thumbs up are for on that picture. And after we've done that a couple times, you've got a fairly well-trained classifier, and you've got a search result that's presumably all shipping containers in this particular example. What's really cool about the way we did this is we analyzed the textual data, and then we analyzed the imagery data, and we represent them in some multidimensional feature space. And so representing them in the same space allows us to search across modes of data, which is a very, very powerful capability. And this is some of the cutting edge research that's coming out of Berkeley and University of Montreal. So once we got a search result, then we turned it into something that our customers were interested in, which was to say, great, you found shipping containers, where are they? And so now we can build a map showing where all the images of shipping containers were found. And so they were looking for cargo or things that were associated with shipping containers, now they would know where they could focus their efforts. So this is an example of a tool that we built it's actually a research and development effort we have underway, but an excellent example of applying data science. And then this last example is looking at air traffic over Europe. There's a lot of flights out there, and there's a lot of information you can learn about looking at these data. And what I'm focusing on here is the visualization aspect of it. This visualization allows us to play and literally watch in real time all these flights as they move. And then you can change the length of the tails, and as you draw out the length of these tails, you start seeing the paths that the flights took. And before long, all of these flight patterns and routes become very clear. And so you can actually look at where the waiting patterns outside airports are. You can see the traditional routes between airports. All of this becomes very clear, which is very useful if you're looking for anomalies and finding out when are the data different than you expect. So here's a great example of doing some visualization that helps you apply data science and find anomalies. Once you've detected what an anomaly looks like or a holding pattern looks like, for example, then you can go and build the software and the analytics to find it. But until you know what you're looking for, it'd be very hard to just say, show me data that's different. There isn't a function for that in most tool sets. And so the visualization of the data is a very important aspect, and that's why it's often brought up as a key part of data science. Social media is also, as I've mentioned once before, at least a growing area of data for exploitation. So Twitter, if you look at all the spatially located tweets over Virginia, we did that, and for a particular period of time, we searched for traffic. And guess what? Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads have a lot of people hashtag traffic. What was a little surprising was there were some hotspots down in Southwest Virginia, which last I checked was not a hotbed of major traffic in Virginia. So we were able to find a particular traffic jam here, and not that this would necessarily be the best way to go finding traffic jams, but it's an example of a result that you can find in the data. So looking at that particular area, it's a little surprising to see all that traffic down there. Okay. So I've given you some examples of applications of data science. I've given you sort of the fields that comprise it, as it is an interdisciplinary field. It's the computer science, it's the analytical and math and statistics, and the problem solving and domain expertise. So why is it a good career? Why are there so many people here listening to me talk today? Well, there certainly is a lot of buzz about this field in all of the magazines and articles coming out because we're collecting more data than ever before. And everybody needs to figure out a way to use these data and exploit them. And it becomes the competitive advantage for many different companies is how well they exploit their data. It'll make or break many of these companies at this point. So it's a great career because there's more data and it's meaningful work. It makes a really big difference to companies' bottom lines when they understand what's going on with their customer base and how they can leverage their data. So the demand being very high, that means the basic principles of economics apply and the pay is competitive, and companies work really hard to retain their employees. So they have nice job perks, flexible hours, long vacation. You know, you certainly hear about all the cool perks of companies out in Silicon Valley. Those things are real because they're trying to retain, you know, data scientists and other hard-to-find employees. So where do data scientists work? Yep, I was afraid that happened. This is a smattering of companies, and it's meant to sort of give you some concept of the breadth. You know, you could work for small analytics firms like my own, CCRI, or you could work for large research institutions like the University of Virginia, the Department of Defense, and the Central Intelligence Agency. They hire tons of data scientists. I went on LinkedIn a couple days ago and did a search for data scientists across the country, and I came up with Johnson & Johnson, Google, Walmart, Geico, Intel, IBM, Cummins Diesel, Apple. All of these companies are hiring data scientists, and suffice it to say, I couldn't even begin to fit all the logos of the companies that were, you know, further down on the list. So there are many, many jobs in this field, and lots of different kinds of companies working in them. So there really is a range of the type and scope of work you'd be working on as a data scientist. So can you become a data scientist? How do people transition into this field? Well, you know, 8 years ago, nobody talked about data science. So, but now it's one of the hottest careers. So obviously you can become one if you weren't one to begin with. And it, you know, can take a little bit of work and dedication. So I've tried to sort of lay out the areas where you might want to do some research and some learning in this previous section. And now I'm going to sort of say the tips I have for, you know, coming into interviews. So you want to learn the technologies. Pick, you know, certain aspects of this. Learn the technologies. Practice with them. Do demonstration analyses. One of the women I hired last year, she was pregnant at the time I hired her, and she was really interested in all of the data that the CDC had on pregnancies. And so she had gone and downloaded that data, and she had done all sorts of analyses on this data. And so she could tell you what percentage of time women give birth 3 days before they're due, 2 days before they were due. She could tell you, you know, all about different kinds of birth defects and all about the different strategies for birthing. And it was really interesting, but it also proved to me, as you know, somebody who's trying to recruit employees, that this is a woman who could come in and really learn about a field and learn about the data and knew how to apply the analytical techniques. Other things you can do are take a data, complete a data science program, whether a formal academic one or through some of the online courses. Or you can try to get a job at a data science firm with the skills that you have, and that's a great way to learn. You know, if you can get on-the-job training, that's the best because it's cheapest and most applied, and typically will ramp you up even faster. So common education backgrounds that I see are systems engineering, computer science, math, statistics. I've been getting a lot of applicants from physicists, chemists. I've had applicants from economists and historians and educators. Pretty much any career path, I've seen many different career paths make applications to CCRI, and many of them have been very successful. So somebody's asking about Coursera's data science specialization. I would certainly encourage you to take a look at that. So if you have a job today and it's in a related field or not a related field and you want to get some family in there, if you take that data science specialization and show me that you've done that, I would think that that shows A, some dedication, and that you have a brief introduction to the range of tools. So actually, jumping back for a second, the data science one I've listed here, there's over 70 new programs in the U.S. alone now in data science, and these are all brand new. University of Virginia just graduated their first class of graduates, and I actually think it's a pretty good program. I hired two of them. And this program is good for people who didn't necessarily start off in this field, so it's a good career-changing approach because you get a formal academic background. But if you don't have the time or don't want to fund that, The Coursera courses definitely provide you a good foundation. And what I would encourage you to do is take those data science specialization and computer science classes and then push it one step further. Find something interesting to you, do an analysis, make a recommendation. The data science program at the University of Virginia is actually interdisciplinary, and it's above the engineering school. It's led by Don Brown, who used to be the chair of the systems engineering department, but it actually is interdepartmental. And it's a master's degree program. So again, find or collect data and conduct analysis. You don't need to have a client to do that. There's tons of data that's available on the website, on the web, and there are tons of analytical tools out there. Get out there, do it. And then I strongly encourage you to learn about the technologies you're doing. So if you want to do a regression analysis, Wikipedia has good references on it. There are lots of textbooks that talk about regression analysis, and there's lots of web pages that talk about it. But you want to learn about things like sample bias. You want to learn about multicollinearity so that you understand what the assumptions are with your data. You don't want to have biased samples. You don't want to have multicollinearity. There are a lot of different gotchas that you can have. And so learning and reading about the assumptions of the models is very important. So I still strongly encourage people to dig in and learn about these techniques. You don't need to know everything if you're coming to apply for a job, but the fact that you can show me that you can learn is usually, and that you're inclined to go learn these things is a really good sign to me as a recruiter. So I'm looking for someone to show me analysis skills, programming skills, data skills, communication skills, math, probability, and statistics, or any technical skills. Showing me that you can do something technical or that you can work with data, that's a really good start. And again, not all of these things, you don't need to show me that you're you've got all of it. If you show me two of the three or one of the three and that you're willing to learn, I'll hire you in and we'll train you on the other two. Okay, so as promised, I wanted to give some tips for people who are applying for jobs. And the first one is to be prepared. Be prepared to have a good resume. Be prepared to describe anything on your resume in detail. If you see something on your resume and you say, geez, what did I do? How did we do that? Did we use C++ or did we use punch cards? If you can't remember that, some of the details of something in your resume probably shouldn't be there, or you should go brush up and remember those things, because I'm going to ask you about those things, and it's always looks good to be knowledgeable about the things you say you're knowledgeable about. Be prepared to have several key examples that show the technical skills that I talked about earlier in this presentation, and you may even want to practice talking about those examples. So if it's your thesis, prepare to explain what you did in your thesis, why it was relevant, what techniques you applied. If it was an analysis you did for your customer, be prepared to explain it to me. What techniques did you use? And if you're worried about whether or not you can share proprietary information about your company, then you want to practice talking about it in an abstract way so that you're not trying to hedge or protect your company's proprietary information during the interview. You want to know what you're going to say in advance. So practicing and thinking about examples that demonstrate your technical knowledge is really, really important. And this sounds silly, but I've actually interviewed people who are on the verge of getting their PhD, and they can only give me a very high-level, 60,000-foot view explanation of what the work they've been doing. And I've come to the point where in the interview I've said, please, just explain anything technical to me. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's a technical, statistical technique. I don't even care if it's something I know about. I just want to hear you walk through something technical. And they were not able to do that. Those people don't get hired. So you want to be able to tick one or two things and go into good technical detail and be prepared to do that. Relax, okay? It's really hard to do that in an interview. Some people are very poised, some people are not, and it's, I know that that's not an easy thing, but the more you prepare, the better off you're going to be. And you also have to remember that interviewing is a two-way street. As an employer who's going through this process, I would not spend many hours of every day trying to find applicants and spending 2 or 3 hours with them in an interview if, A, I didn't think they were worth the interview in the first place, and B, if I didn't really need to hire somebody to do a job. So it's a two-way street. You're interviewing with the employer as much as they're interviewing you. Sometimes I think having that mindset is useful when you you know, start getting worried or anxious about these things. Research the company. Show some initiative. Data scientists are curious. They think about things. They want to understand how things work and how systems you know, work together. If you don't know anything about my company, you haven't done any research about what we do, you haven't really shown me that you're applying some of those skills. So I'll be a little skeptical if you have no questions or you haven't even demonstrated that you did more than a cursory glance at my website. Sometimes if you can figure out what technology the company is, write a simple program using that technology. It's okay to say, hey, I saw that you use Scala on your website, so I decided to write a Hello World and see what that was all about. Yeah, that's interesting. I'm excited when people do that. Don't be hesitant to bring a portfolio or show things, whether you know, a web portfolio or a printed portfolio or GitHub. A lot of candidates will share their GitHub repository with me. And we'll take a look at some examples of their code in GitHub. And that's a great way for us to assess programming skill. So I like that. Do not do some of these things. Don't complain about your dumb, good-for-nothing, annoying, poor community, overpaid jerk of a boss. You know, it's fair to say I didn't see eye to eye with the management. It's okay to say that I had disagreements with some of the people there, but that's not something you want to focus on. You want to focus the interview on positive things and where your skills are. Don't dwell on the problems with your other company. I'll probably ask you why you're looking to leave, because I'm always curious. If it sounds like somebody has a good job, why would they be looking to move? And I want to understand that rationale. So you should probably be prepared to have a well-formed explanation for why you're leaving or why you're looking for a new job. So that's a good question to be prepared to answer. Don't dwell on things that you have not had the opportunity to do. I hate hearing that, especially when I hear it 5 or 6 times in an interview. Well, I never had the opportunity to look at Hadoop. I never had the opportunity to apply regression. At some point, it's okay to say that once, and it's okay to have an example of that, but at some point, you know, if there was something that you wanted to do and you couldn't find a weekend to sit down and learn a little bit about it, or at least, you know, do some research, you know, the excuse begins to wear out. You can certainly say that my company wasn't involved in cloud technologies, and so I never really focused on it, but you could spend a little bit of time to research on it and learn about it because you're interested in cloud technologies and you want to move your career in that direction. So if you have questions about that, I'd be happy to answer, but it's I sometimes people spend too much of their interview talking about things they never had the opportunity to do. Think about what the interviewer is trying to figure out. The interviewer is trying to figure out, does the person have the skills to do the job? Is this person smart? Can she learn what I need them to learn? You know, will this person fit in with my corporate culture? You can ask questions of the interviewers to see if you will fit in. First of all, you don't want to go to an organization where you're not going to fit in. So even if you want a job or need a job, if you go to a place where you're not going to fit in, it's not going to work for very long. So you want to ask, what's the culture like? What will I be doing? What is my day-to-day life like? How do I move through your organization? Once you start hearing answers to those questions, then you can reflect back to the interview which parts of you are relevant to that, you know? And, you know, if you know, you're going to work for a company where there's a lot of collaborative research and you say, oh, I love doing research presentations and sharing, you know, the work I've done and brown bag lunches, that's a positive thing. And that shows to me that you're going to be the kind of person who will fit in with the people I hear, and those are the kinds of people I want to hire. So do ask questions. Be prepared to ask questions, not just about the culture, but about the kinds of work we do, and look for opportunities where you can learn from the interviewer more in-depth information about the company, and then reflect back the, you know, honest aspects of you that align with that. And you know, I'm not trying to tell you to fake it or to say things you can't do, but if you're honest in that situation, you're likely to find a good matchup between employer and employee. So with all of that said, that's the extent of my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer questions. I hope this was at least relevant and gave you some clues as to where you might want to start if you're looking into this career, and I certainly would encourage people to consider it as an option going forward. So I'll scan back through here. Were there any questions that came up, Liz, that I haven't answered yet?
None have come in, but I see some people typing.
Okay, great. When do I typically hire? I'm pretty much always hiring. I can't remember a time when I haven't been. So it's sort of a continuous effort. What is the age of the oldest person that I've hired? He was probably when I hired him, late 50s, early 60s. My company is Commonwealth Computer Research, or CCRI. We're a small data science firm located here in Charlottesville, Virginia. CCRI now has about 63 to 65 employees. We've been steadily growing. We don't have a set number. We do have positions of people to hire, but we are looking to hire a few people right now. No, we actually have very little turnover. The problem is we've grown. When I started, I was the sixth employee, and now we're approaching 65 and going to 70 at some point. But the problem has really been that we've grown the business and need more people to do more work, which is a nice problem to have. Can I give an individual advice? Do I have a shot at this? If you want to shoot me an email or connect with me on LinkedIn, feel free to shoot me a question. I'm happy to answer questions. Cable is a great example of taking some initiative to solve interesting data science problems. Every once in a while, we get a group of people here who try to take a whack at some of the Cable problems. So that's a great idea. For those of you who don't know, Cable is essentially a set of online competitions that you can do related to data science. And so they'll give you challenging problems, and you're competing to come up with the best answer. It's a while back, Netflix did something similar where they published a bunch of data and said whoever can come up with the best recommendation system will, you know, win, I think, $1 million. I don't know if there are prizes for Kegel, or maybe some of them have prizes, some of them don't. Let's see here. What is the most unusual, non-traditional background that you have hired? I've hired teachers. I've hired a landscape architect. That's probably a little out of left field. I've hired environmental scientists, physicists, nuclear physicists, lots of mathematicians. If I had to pick one programming language to learn, what would I pick? I would say Python is a really good starting point. The reason is that it's a full-fledged programming language, and you can build applications using Python. It's got a fairly smooth on-ramp for learning how to do it, and it also has some really great analysis tools. You can look at the NumPy and SciPy packages, and they have a lot of different tools for doing data science. For conducting data science applications. So you can take a look at, I just published those by spelling, so if you look those up, you'll see lots of different stuff. Stanford, I don't know about University of Washington. Certainly Berkeley is very prestigious. Stanford, Berkeley, or any major computer science school would certainly be good there. Let's see here. You indicated the CCRI is one of the training grow talent. Is that common in your industry? It's hard for me to know if this is entirely common in the industry, but I can speculate that it has to be to some degree, because finding people with all the skills you need has been very challenging. We've been hiring for a long time. I've tried a lot of different job posts, and I've got a lot of different applicants. And it's very rare to find sort of the complete package in all in one person. So almost always we have to bring people in and train them on different things. We use Scala as a programming language fairly extensively. I'll warn you that this is probably not the first programming language you want to pick up. But hiring Scala, if I just look for people who could program in Scala, I'd have such a small community of people, I wouldn't be able to hire them. So it's almost a necessity in this line of business. Is the Julia language growing in acceptance and use? Yes, it's growing in acceptance and use. I've definitely heard of it a number of times, and I've heard of it more. I can't honestly weigh in on that thoroughly at the moment. There's probably some other people in my company who could give you a better result or get better refinement on that, but it's certainly not a bad thing to take a look at. Do I hire international students? Unfortunately, I do not at the moment. Most of my work is with the government, and we have to unfortunately hire U.S. citizens, which is one of the most frustrating aspects of my job as a recruiter, because there are many highly qualified people out there. That being said, if you develop skills in data science, there are lots of there's a lot of companies out there hiring, and many of them don't have their hands tied like I do when it comes to that restriction. Yep, I agree. There's a number of different data science courses. I haven't witnessed them all. I know machine learning by Andrew. I don't know how to pronounce it. NG. I think it's Nguyen. That's very popular. The computer science program from the Computer Science 101 program is very good. Yes. So somebody asked about Tableau. Tableau is a data visualization framework. It is widely used. It's a very powerful capability for visualizing large quantities of data. It is not something that we use because we try to stick with open source technology. Tableau is closed source and very expensive. It's a great tool for many applications. I'm not trying to knock it, but it's not something we use here. So how many check marks are required for desired skills, or do new hires have to have? That's a big, it depends. I really do try to take a fairly holistic view of each individual candidate. I'll take a look at their experience. I'll take a look at their approach to learning things. And I'll also take a look at, you know, what level in their career they're looking to come in at. I have hired people with, you know, PhDs in one field, and they wanted to do a career change. They were willing to take a pay cut to make the shift. And because they were willing to compromise on the salary aspect, I could bring them in at a lower level, but in a new career. And so they had to have less of the boxes checked in order for them to be a useful hire from my perspective. So, you know, it really depends on how flexible you are with respect to how many boxes you have to have checked. The pay range for someone starting, typically speaking, we pay someone with a bachelor's degree in a technical field such as systems engineering, data science, or computer science, around probably $62,000 a year. That's probably somewhere around the starting point. So somebody asked if having work samples, if the code from written papers with the code embedded in the appendix would work. Sure. You know, again, I'm going to have limited time to review everything, so you might want to, you know, highlight the areas that are demonstrate your specific skill or the specific analytic that you're trying to do. Certainly having published papers on that you were participating in is a good credential that you can bring to bear. Do I recommend courses over Coursera over Udacity? I don't know anything about Udacity. In fact, this is the first I've heard of it, so yes, only because I've never heard of the other, but I really don't know anything about that, so I'm not qualified to answer that question. Are there good data scientist job search websites? KD Nuggets. KD Nuggets has some interesting information. It's actually a really good resource for data science information. To be perfectly candid, the best source of applicants that CCRI has is LinkedIn. And I've almost foregone looking at other websites and search engines from a recruiting perspective because the majority of people we were hiring were coming through LinkedIn, and it turned out to be the most efficient way for me to hire people. And there are lots of data scientist positions on LinkedIn as well. So I would highly encourage you to have a LinkedIn profile and to update it before you start applying. Also, I will say that we do look at LinkedIn profiles, so if you are applying for a job, we'll look you up because it often provides a little bit richer context when we're looking at candidates. Let's see here. The other good website I would strongly encourage people to look at is Stack Overflow, www.stackoverflow.com. This is a website that a lot of programmers use to get sort of a question answering forum. It's run by a guy who had a wonderful blog on programming and computer science, but it's a really good website. Let's see here. you know, I'm sure there is a professional association for data scientists, but I'm not explicitly in it, so I can't tell you right off the top of my head. Do we ever hire a data scientist to work remotely? Yes, we have. It's my preference that they're here on site, particularly if they're changing careers, because then I can change them. Or I can change that, yes, I can train them. Besides data science, with suggestions for PhDs? Let's see here, besides this. So, I mean, for PhDs transitioning from academia, again, it would be practicing and learning from the things that you have on the web. So give me some demonstrations of some analyses you've run. I've hired lots of PhDs who've come right out of academia in somewhat non-related fields but have been working, you know, with numbers. So whether you're a computational biologist or a physicist or a nuclear physicist who've been, you know, dealing with large data sets and analyzing data, that's a really good background for data science. So that's often for PhDs. So it kind of depends on what your PhD is in, is how easy it is to make that transition. You know, for my company, I do hire a few people to work remotely, but that's far from that's usually the exception, not the rule personally, but there are lots of data science companies that do allow people to work off-site. So, you know, speaking specifically for me, I tend to hire people in Charlottesville, but other companies definitely hire people to work remotely. So does an accountant skill set translate well into data science? So I would think, I would probably have to talk to you about that specifically and get an understanding, but if I were you, I would pitch that your facilities with working with data, particularly, you know, in analyzing it. So depending on which kind of work you've done as an accountant, it kind of depends. The bookkeeping stuff, not that relevant. Your sort of in-depth analysis of spending and, you know, really analyzing currency flows would be helpful. So it really sort of depends on what you spend most of your time on. But again, I would encourage you to go get some other data sets, practice some other data sets, and learn some of the techniques that you might apply as a data scientist. So a lot of the things I recommended earlier, I think, apply to an accountant as well as anybody else. What is the difference between data science and data management? That's sort of an interesting question. Data science is the art of exploiting the data, and data management is the art of keeping it and making it available. Data scientists need to be at least passingly familiar with how data are managed, but they're not necessarily going to be the ones who are optimizing the database. So you'll have people whose career is in data management. So these are database administrators, and their focus is on making sure that those systems are running smoothly and efficiently, whereas data scientists are then taking the data and using the data to a specific end. Yes, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn if you're interested in CCRI. I don't discourage people from linking in with me prior to an interview. That's not a negative. Actually, I've had people ask me that. It's not a negative thing to try and connect with me. Let's see here. Okay. So the last question I see on here is, would an actuary or an actuarial scientist be a good transition smoothly? What I understand is an actuary's job is to assess the probability or the likelihood of specific events. So if you're looking at disability, you're an actuary studying disability income, or you're looking at what's the odds that somebody in a specific career path is going to have a disabling accident or an issue. So yes, I absolutely think that being able to look at data and try and assess probabilities of things happening is well aligned with data science. In fact, I've actually thought that an area of opportunity for CCRI at some point may be to look at insurance firms and help them and to develop techniques that would help them. So I suspect that there are companies out there that specialize in data science as it applies to the actuarial fields. So that might actually be a good area for you to try and look at. That's a suspicion, not that I know of anyone specifically. Somebody was actually asking me one one point, actually I was looking at the list of people who signed in. I think I saw a lawyer on the list. I actually was contacted by a company that was working to do analytics on laws and the text from laws that have been passed through Congress. And so having a background in law would actually be useful in that particular case, particularly if you are sort of have an analytical bent and you spend your time trying to figure out ways to better or automatically analyze the legal system.
I'm going to pop in for just a moment since we're coming up on 1 o'clock and some of our audience may need to sign off. I'd like to just give Jamie a big thank you for his presentation today and thank everyone who's joined us. We will continue to take questions for a few more minutes, so please continue to write in if you still have a question. Jamie has agreed to stay over a little bit. I wanted to also mention that our next webinar is coming up on June 26th. Yvonne King is going to present 5 key strategies to maximize revenue when negotiating business deals. So we'll get back to Jamie for a few more questions, and thank you all very much.
Okay, so the last question I see is it important to have a background in text mining for being a data scientist? No, some of the people who work here have no idea what to do with text data, but they work with other kinds of data. So data science is interdisciplinary by its nature. It's also, in many ways, one of these career paths that is a toolkit, and it can be applied very, very broadly. Recently, I hired, I interviewed people who had been applying data science to football and baseball statistics, and so they were, you know, focusing on the math and science behind picking good baseball teams, and so really, this is a very general purpose set of capabilities, and anything that there's data that you can access about something, you know, provides an opportunity for analysis. So really imagine all the different kinds of data there are, and then imagine all the different applications of those data, and you can think of all the different jobs that a data scientist could do. So very broad. I was wondering if I'd get this question. The difference between data mining and machine learning. This is sort of one of those possible, you know, holy wars or maybe even semantic pissing contests. So one way of looking at it is the field of data mining came up predominantly through the statistics world, and machine learning came through the computer science world. That's sort of the history of it as far as I understand it. The other distinction could be sometimes that data mining is the work that is done where the analyst is intimately involved as part of the process, where machine learning is the art of taking an analytical process and automating it such that a non-expert in data science could use it. So building the analytical tools and building analytics that are automatable would be more machine learning. This is getting down into the weeds, though. If you say you do data mining, I'm going to assume you do machine learning and vice versa. I use them interchangeably. Most people probably do. You're probably going to find a few people who get a little riled up about it, but I don't think it's worth it.
Jamie, I saw one question come in a little while ago. Someone was asking what undergraduate majors you look for when you hire.
Again, it gets back to pretty much anything with a sort of technical bent to it, but the most common ones are computer science, systems engineering, physics is good, mathematics is good, statistics is good, computational biology, computational chemistry, those sorts of things. Those are more graduate level degrees, but those sorts of things play well. Let's see. There are programs in business that focus on IT. That is not the way I would recommend going if you want to have a technical job. I wouldn't go to business school. I would go to an engineering school or a computer science program.
Okay, thank you. I don't see any more questions, so I think that's all for this afternoon. Jamie, thank you so much for being here with us today, and thanks to everybody who joined us. We look forward to seeing you again on the 26th. And thank you all. Jamie, thanks again. I'm going to go ahead and exit, and you all will receive a recording of today's webinar presentation in a little while this afternoon. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Liz. And it was my pleasure. Appreciate all the kind words that I'm seeing come across the screen. I hope it was useful. And like I said, if you have further questions, you may shoot me an email on LinkedIn, and that'd be fine. Best of luck to all of you as you pursue your new careers.